TalkZone.com.
Here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
The name's Adam Weber, and I see that you buy baseball cards.
How much you want for this Mickey Mantle rookie season?
I was hoping to sell all of the cards.
TalkZone presents the Fan Cave Radio Show with your host, Tom Morgan.
This guy's unbelievable.
Featuring Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune and Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times. Sponsored by SouthsideCards.com.
Wait, I'll make you a deal. I will give you a Rogers Hornsby if you take me to the hotel.
The show that can change your life.
Rogers Hornsby?
Just let your wife find out you're listening to a sports and memorabilia show on the internet.
Rogers Hornsby's worth like $4,000.
So I got two of them, and this many Larry Yogi Berras.
Sit back, relax, and learn a thing or two. It's the Fan Cave Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
Let's go to work.
Welcome to the Fan Cave Radio Show. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times, and producer Dave Olson. If you want to give us a call, the number here is 1-888-463-6748. We're giving away a prize package on July 7th. Anybody who calls or emails with a comment or question about anything we're talking about can get in the drawing. A prize package worth over $700, which includes Dave Hoekstra's book, which he signed, a Pete Rose signed poster, a box of Top Series 2 baseball, and 12 bats from Hoosier Bat Company. And Dave Hoekstra right now is in Seattle. Dave just took an Amtrak from Portland to Seattle. How was that?
The beautiful Cascades. It was 100% full. And I thought I was going to do some work, you know, lay out my computer and stuff. But I was on one of those, you know, I was just flying. I was just in the business section, so it was really tight quarters and stuff, you know. But I'll tell you, about 10 to 15% of the people on the train were Cub fans. They were coming up for the game and stuff.
So, really?
Yeah, they represent pretty well, you know. And
wearing
it's beautiful.
Their hats?
I'm gonna write. Yeah, they're wearing their hats and T-shirts and acting like, you know, something exciting was gonna happen. That's the thing about, I think being a Cub fan, it's just more about the event than the end result. You know what I mean? It's just
it has to be
going to Woodstock or something, but it's, you know, not really about baseball. But it's a beautiful. I'm gonna write about it. It's just a beautiful, beautiful train ride. You know, kind of you can see Mount McKinley. You go through the Olympic. I think it's the Olympic National Forest, Olympia National Forest, and come through Tacoma. It's really a nice ride, about 3.5 hours, and now I'm at a little flophouse hotel not far from the ballpark.
Are you going to the game?
Yeah, I'm just going to buy a ticket and watch Cliff Lee shut the Cubs down.
So the Cubs lost last night, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why I bother asking. It's kind of just a given.
Yeah.
So, Phil, what are you writing about now? Are you still working on your book?
Yeah, still plodding along. Had a nice trip to Cooperstown last week, and you know, not quite writing, researching, but awesome working with the research library at the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. These people could not have been more helpful. Book's going to be on Ernie Banks, but I'm going to try to tell it in large part through people that were influential on Banks. And unfortunately, many of those people have passed along. So a guy like Gene Baker, who came up along at the same time as him, Phil Wrigley, Buck O'Neill, the wonderful Negro League manager and scout, invaluable research I think I was able to do in Cooperstown. So awesome place to visit, and I just found out a good place to work, too.
You know, Jack Brickhouse was actually pretty big with Ernie. I wonder if Jack Brickhouse's wife would have any good info for you.
Well, you have told me something I didn't know about Ernie Banks and Brickhouse. When there was a period when Brickhouse would get Ernie to help him out with the sportscast on WGN TV.
Yeah.
Well, I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Tom, you told me this story, so now tell it for our audience. How did it go when Ernie was narrating the Cubs highlights?
Oh, in the fourth inning, It wasn't very good. he was a little rough on the sports cast.
How about this?
It was the same.
Phil Negro threw me one of his knucklers, and I hit it on the wavelength.
Yeah, right.
That was the same era of Wendell Smith. Remember Wendell Smith would do the sports?
Yeah, he was actually a trailblazer.
Yes, he was. Yeah.
Was Wendell Smith in the Olympics when Jesse Owens was?
Well, that's a good call. You might be right.
I think he was. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I think he was. That would be something good to look up. Maybe I'll look that up for next week's show and look up a little info on him.
One of my prouder moments as a member of the Baseball Writers Association was when the dean, the late Jerome Holtzman, championed Wendell Smith's cause to win the Spink Award, which is our top award and the one that's recognized by the Hall of Fame. So, you know, if you go to the Hall of Fame, you can read a little bit about Wendell Smith, too.
Yeah. Is he in the broadcast wing?
No, he's actually in the writer's wing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know that. So did you get a lot of info from the files on that you would have never expected or been able to pick up anywhere else?
I think so. You know, much of what they had, I mean, it would be the equivalent of, you know, spending 10 years searching old microfilm and things. I mean, they have essentially newspaper clip files, magazine clip files. They have a file on every player that's ever been in the major leagues. And I saw this in action, which is pretty cool. People that have relatives that were big league players can go into the library and check out and read about their relatives, whatever they've saved. I mean, it's not especially scientific what they've saved. It's, you know, mostly New York newspapers, sporting news. There was an awesome article, 1972, on Phil Wrigley from the Saturday Evening Post. Just, you know, some really, really cool things to go back and look at. And, you know, not so much. You know, they do have some video archives, like some, you know, some people that have done kind of living history type interviews, and there's some of that, but the clips are really awesome.
I bet. You know, I spent some time today watching the press conference the Bulls put on to introduce Tom Thibodeau as their new coach, and the first thing I thought is Gar Forman and Thibodeau will never team up to be a duo at a comedy club. There's not a whole lot of personality there. But I think he's going to be a good coach. I like him. He's really intense. You can see he's just, I think he spends his entire life. That's what his entire life is, basketball. And supposedly he's been a good players guy over the years. So it was really pretty interesting. But in order, the guys, I wrote it down to see who he talked about first from the Bulls. First, he talks about Rose and how he's going to have to pick it up, and he's going to be the leader, but he's going to have to pick it up on the defensive end, which that was good to hear because Rose has the talent to be a great defender, but he really isn't. And then he said Joakim is an underrated passer, still needs to get stronger. Taj is an impressive defensive player. Then he talks about Heinrich. He talked about Heinrich longer. He admires his versatility, his competitive spirit. He can guard, like, different positions on the floor. He really seemed to like Heinrich. And then he's like, oh, yeah, and Luol, he's underrated. He does a lot without the ball. I didn't get the feeling he liked Luol as much. He said he thinks his shooting has improved. He'd like to see him be able to hit some threes. So those were the five guys he talked about. And judging from that, I mean, maybe they're going to still try to trade Heinrich to clear some cap room, but it seemed to me that he'd like to keep him. And then it wouldn't surprise me, though, if they do make they're trying to still clear enough cap room so they can sign two free agents. So it wouldn't surprise me. At least they try to trade their first round pick along with a player in a deal tomorrow. Be interesting to see if they can do it or not. But
Did anyone ask about LeBron?
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Rick Morrissey that asked. He goes, from a coaching standpoint, something to this effect, do you think it helps if a coach has the same agent as a free agent he might be trying to get on his team? You know, he worded it something like that. I think it was Morrissey that asked him. And he kind of chuckled and said, well, I've got the guy that there's a lot of guys and these, my guy handles coaches and, but he did kind of chuckle at the question. So yeah, that he can't, somebody said something about LeBron before that. And I think Gar kind of said, oh, can't answer that. You know, you can't speak, I guess, hardly anything about any individual free agent before July 1st.
They even had a Bring LeBron to Portland rally while I've been out there in Portland. They had all these people at the Rose Garden, and they think that he might come out to Portland, which I don't see that unless
that was a Nike rumor thing. I heard it just last week. I saw something coming out on that.
Hey Tom, I heard that my friend Gene Wojciechowski's column has surfaced as a rumor in Miami, which was. Like all of the big guys signing with the same team, that there's some crazy rumor out of Miami that LeBron and Bosch and I don't know if Wade was in it, but one of the other top free agents, a possibility for Miami. And that sounds real crazy.
That
they
is.
They were supposed to have that summit meeting, weren't they? Were they all going to get together and all those guys?
Yeah, that's certainly what Wade talked about in a Tribune story 10 days ago or so. It's like, yeah, we're all going to get together. And then seems like they've kind of been backpedaling from that and trying to act like independent contractors anyway.
So Wade, Bosch, and LeBron would be together in Miami. And let's see, who exactly would get the assists there. I don't know about that team defense either. That's one thing that everybody has to remember is all these big-time free agents weren't in the finals. You know, team defense really is what wins. Thibodeau was talking about that some. As you get deeper in the playoffs and the talent gets closer, it's which team clicks together the best on team defense and who's willing to pay the price and really get down and play D. And a lot of times if you get too many superstars, they don't want to. You know, that's not the fun part of it. It's like guys who, like, let's use an example of Ben Gordon. Ben Gordon he can make shots from anywhere. Okay, so what does he work on? And he's strong. So what does he work on in the off season? He works on his shooting and probably his strength, when really what he needs work on is ball handling, passing the ball. The things that you're weakest at, you should really be working on more, but that's not fun. Guys usually are good at a thing because they've left practicing it their whole life, and they've gotten good at it from the repetition, and they practice the things they're good at. The hardest thing is to practice something that you're not naturally good at. And defense, any big talent can play it, but it's hard. So a lot of them don't want to. I could see Rose really becoming a really good defender. I could see him wanting to do it because he wants to win so much. But you never know. We'll have to see about that one. Now, we're already up to the time for the afternoon, Phil. Are you ready for something, Phil?
I'm so ready. I actually have two quick ones for you.
All right. Well, the morning, Phil, the only place you can hear it is at, or you can read it on ChicagoBreakingSports.com. But the afternoon, Phil, the only place you can hear it is right here. So here we go.
Well, one of my favorite games of the year is the Futures game, which is top minor league prospects, and it's played the Sunday before the All-Star game. This year it'll be on July 11th. It's always on TV. I'm not sure off the top of my head. I would guess it'd be MLB Network. ESPN has done the game in the past. But they have, you know, you get a chance to see really, really good players in this game. Starlin Castro, the Cubs shortstop, was in the game last year. But I think there's a really interesting section of players with Chicago ties that are going to be in that game this year. Daniel Hudson, the White Sox pitcher, starting pitcher, just kind of waiting for a spot to open up, is going to pitch in that game. Christian Frederick, who is a kid from he was not a kid anymore, but he went to Loyola Academy. He's Colorado's top pitching prospect. He's going to pitch in the game. And the Cubs have, I think, two really intriguing representatives. The center fielder with speed, who I love, Brett Jackson, was their number one pick last year. And this last guy, I think a lot of people are going to want to see, Hak Joo Lee, the young Korean shortstop, who people project to maybe in a couple years push Starlin Castro to another position. It's going to be his first big showcase. So I'm really interested to get there and check out Hak Joo Lee, who I'd hoped to see in spring training and did not. And then another quick thing, today Freddie Gonzalez fired from the Florida Marlins, and it to me is it a random thing, or is it the first domino to fall? Since spring training, since I talked to Tony La Russa, and he was talking about his great relationship with Jerry Reinsdorf, how he would still like to go, if he wasn't in St. Louis, the White Sox would be one of the places he would consider working because of his relationship with the owner, which he says would be paramount to wherever he went. He wasn't speaking about the managerial job then, but my conspiracy theory antenna went right up. And since spring training, I've been writing about a managerial carousel where Freddie Gonzalez winds up replacing Bobby Cox in Atlanta next year. Ozzie Guillen winds up going to the Florida Marlins, who I think are one of the few teams he would like to manage if he wasn't managing the White Sox. And Tony La Russa comes back to Chicago to end out his managerial career. So,
wow, that would be like a blockbuster.
Absolutely. And so far, the Florida management, I guess right about now they should be talking about it. Jeffrey Loria and Larry Beinfest, the GM, talking about what they're thinking about their managerial spot. And there is a report they've already contacted Bobby Valentine, who's just kind of waiting in the wings for a job he likes and apparently has some interest, has a relationship with Loria, even actually talked to him last September about possibly replacing Freddie Gonzalez then. So if Valentine pops up as a permanent hire, then the carousel is going to stop. The conspiracy theory will be busted. But until that time, I'm riding the trifecta, I guess it would be, of managerial moves for 2011.
Well, I understand.
That's a good theory.
Well, I understand Guillen's family ties in Florida, but do you think how would he like not being in the spotlight so much? He'd be pretty underground there. You know what I mean? He seems
I don't know if he would be underground or not, because, you know, it's not like a White Sox manager in and of itself, being a White Sox manager, gets a lot of national attention. I think Ozzy draws it to himself. I don't recall Terry Bevington getting a ton of spotlight attention during his managerial reign, or Gene Lamont, probably. I don't really remember that. And in Florida, they have a new stadium that they're opening in 2012. So that kind of changes the dynamics of the franchise. And, you know, Ozzy, you know, was there in 2003 as a coach when they won the World Series. He has relationships with Loria and, you know, the front office there. And, you know, it is his adopted hometown. So, you know, I think those are the reasons it would appeal to him. And I can never see, you know, Ozzy is a little bit like Sparky Anderson. Sparky managed in Cincinnati and managed in Detroit, and whether he was with good teams or bad teams, he always kept things interesting, and those, you know, wherever he was, the spotlight kind of followed. I think that would be the case with Ozzy.
There was just something in the paper, I think it was in the Sun-Times, within the last week or so, where Ozzie had said something about looking for a long term or an extension. So maybe he's been contacted about that, and if he can get things solidified with the Sox, he'll do it. But if not, that would be a good alternative. So you never know.
Well, and I think the key to the whole thing is the La Russa St. Louis relationship, which is very tenuous, much more so than you would think. It wasn't even the guarantee that he was going to be back there for 2010. You know, and if they didn't have such a good team, if they hadn't invested so heavily in Matt Holliday and the moves they made last year when they traded for Mark DeRosa, I'm not sure he would be there now. And you look at this Cardinals team, if things go a little bit sideways and, you know, they don't have the big year, it might just be the end of his, you know, he's been there a long time. 1996 was his first year. He took him to the playoffs in 96 out of nowhere with the Cardinals. So I think that thing's kind of breaking up. And if he, you know, he told me when I talked to him in spring training, he did not want to manage. He didn't picture himself managing anywhere again after he left St. Louis. He just thought he would be at a point in his life where he couldn't promise a team a three-year commitment. But I bet that would change real fast if Jerry Reinsdorf started talking to him. And if the White Sox looked like they were going to have a competitive team, I don't think he would want to manage a bad team. But, you know, if the White Sox looked like they could be competitive next year and La Russa needed a job,
makes sense.
That would be, you know, two of Jerry Reinsdorf's, you know, favorite guys, La Russa and Ozzie Guillen. You know, if Ozzie could move to something else that would make him happy, you know, I could see that happening. So I think the La Russa Cardinal thing is probably the key piece.
Well, it's time for our first break. Hang in there, everybody. We've got the break. Then we'll be back with Bucks in the Belfry, Hoekstra Chicago, and other odds and ends and whatever. So hang in there. We'll be right back.
Can you hear that? Listen carefully. It's the sound of your old, inefficient appliances throwing your money out the window. It's a good thing you can get up to a $500 prepaid rebate card by mail with the purchase of select Energy Star qualified Maytag brand appliances at Dependable Maytag. Save on dishwashers, refrigerators, and laundry pairs. Get rid of your costly old appliances and lower your monthly bills. Visit Dependable Maytag in Naperville today or visit our website at DependableMaytagStore.com. Visit store for full details and qualified models.
Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois. Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at southsidecards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at southsidecards.com.
Castle Home Inspection is an Illinois licensed company offering home inspections, radon and mold testing. Trust your home to the friendly experts at Castle Home Inspection, in business for 16 years. Call 630-462-1050. That's 630-462-1050.
You're listening to TalkZone.com.
Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
That tune reminds me it's time for Bucks in the Belfry. Each week I talk about unusual or valuable items that have sold in the marketplace or unusual people who think they have something valuable. Last week, a new product came in which I thought was really neat. It's called Ringside Boxing. And what they had in each box is about $250. And you'd get two autographs, a memorabilia card, and about 10 or 12 other cards. And some of the things that come out of there are just, I don't know, I guess I like boxing history more than I even realized. because I was looking at the list of, well, cut signatures that were in it was just a unbelievable group. Pretty much every big name boxer from the 20th century that you could think of was in it with a one-of-one cut signature. There was a John L. Sullivan cut on eBay. It was at $826 and still had time left. Guys like Jack Dempsey, James Braddock, who they made the movie after, Jersey Joe Walcott, Joe Louis, John L. Sullivan, all kinds of guys. And then Muhammad Ali signed a total of 90 cards, and four of them were each numbered to 20, and one of them was numbered to 10. The first one numbered to 20 ended at $1,134 on eBay. A couple other ones ended at $900, and one of the autographs numbered to 10 ended at $1,075. I pulled an autograph of Hurricane Carter out of it, which I thought was pretty neat, which sold for $70. And then I have Chuck Wepner, an autograph of him on eBay. And the story of him, I'm actually going to end up keeping this card. I have to let it run. But if it doesn't go, Chuck Wepner is actually the guy that they patterned Rocky after. Apparently, Sylvester Stallone, and this comes off of Wepner's website, Stallone was watching the Ali Wepner fight, which went, Wepner made it to the 15th round somehow. He looked as bloody through that thing as Rocky did, and he actually knocked Ali down in a middle round, made it to the 15th round, but I guess when he saw that fight, that's when he came up with the whole Rocky idea. So I wonder if Wepner's getting any residuals off of that. Think of how much money those movies made.
But how much do you think Leon Spinks' stuff would be worth? I've got a pair of trunks that he actually wore that were autographed by him. Yeah,
that he wore in a fight.
Yeah, yeah. But Leon Spinks. And you know what I was going to do? I was going to wear them in the bleachers. This is years ago. I was just going to wear them in the summer. I know. Everybody told me, don't wear them. So I don't even have them framed. They're in a plastic bag in my office.
The key to that, if they were the ones that he wore in the fight that he beat Ali.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know how I would document that. But
You don't have any idea what fight it came from, huh?
I got them from a dealer on the north side years ago. Like, I'd say 15 years ago and stuff. I don't know if, you know, Leon was selling stuff directly and things like that, but yeah, I've got them. Never worn by me.
Yeah, except in the bleachers at Wrigley. You only spilled two beers on them.
Yeah.
Well, then
Tom.
Yeah.
Tom, before we get totally off the subject, trivia question.
Okay.
The Chuck Wepner's nickname. Do you know that one?
Oh, I can't think of it right now, but what was it like?
Did it have something about blood or something?
Like Bloody Pig or something? What was it?
I believe he's from Bayonne, New Jersey, and the nickname
the Bayonne Bleeder.
Bayonne Bleeder. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, reading the story about him, I thought, now that's actually, especially it's not all that valuable of an autograph, I'm going to end up just hanging on to that one. But now, going more to the valuable item, I hate to keep bringing up Steven Strasburg every week, but it's just getting crazier and crazier. There's a one-of-one autograph of his on eBay. You know that one card ended last week, I think it was last week or the week before, that went for $16,400. It was a one-of-one superfractor. Well, now there's a one-of-one autograph on eBay. Before I get to that price, the superfractor, apparently the guy who bought it, got it graded by Beckett. It's on the way back. It got a 9.5 gem mint grade, which actually, I don't know how they gave it that good of a grade. It didn't look, I thought it would get a mint 9 at the best from what I saw of it. But anyway, that's back on eBay. It has 53 bids, and it's up to $19,999 with 5 days left. So he's already turning a profit on that one. But the one-of-one autographed card with 5 days left has 144 bids, and it's at $101,000. $101,200 as of about 20 minutes ago with 5 days left. Now, I hope whoever is doing that is doing it with the idea that they're going to promote their business by buying this, get all the publicity from it. Because, for instance, the guy who won the card for $16,000, he was on a national ESPN show. So that has to be what they're thinking, to be paying this much money. I mean, Strasburg's a great-looking pitcher, great command of three plus pitches, a change-up, everything, but $101,000 for a guy who just started, that's so far beyond anything that's happened before. It's just, it's almost mind-boggling. So that, and then not only that, but somebody's asking $40,000 for Steven-Strasburg.com. Oh, the Strasburg mania continues. He's pitching today, too. I saw it looked like he had not given up any runs after two innings, but I clicked out of it. So that's the Bucks in the Belfry for today. Go ahead, Dave.
How intense did the Maguire-Sosa thing? I know the Strasburg thing is in a league of its own and stuff, but how intense did the Maguire-Sosa memorabilia get? And, I mean, look what happened to that. I mean, how was the fallout on that?
Oh, that was very big. I mean, that was when people were still in a time where a lot of people were still down after the strike or lockout or whatever it was from 94. And people were going crazy about that. I remember, there was something about I actually got quoted in the Tribune for something with a Maguire home run ball at the time. And, you know, what the value of it might be. That, remember his, was it his 70th home run? Went for like $3 million in an auction.
Right.
And it would go nowhere near that right now. But the guy who won that did it basically to promote his business. And he was thinking, okay, he could do an ad in the Super Bowl, or he could buy that ball and the way he looked at it, he got way more publicity and exposure and benefit from buying that ball than he would have gotten from a Super Bowl ad. So, a lot of times guys who bid on these things, there's a lot more that goes into it than just being a collector who thinks it's a neat thing. But then I was also looking. Through Twitter with one of the Chicago Tribune links. There's a Cubs fantasy camp at Wrigley Field. For $7,500, this is what you can get. Batting tips from Billy Williams and Ernie Banks. Dave, that would come in handy for you at this point, right?
Yeah.
A custom-made Cubs uniform, which is like the last thing I would want. A chance to take batting practice off Sutcliffe. That would be fun. Except a couple swings, I'd probably be in a body cast.
And he's a slow worker, too, you know. He's,
yeah, right. Yeah. Maybe half an hour in between pitches and get bored.
Yeah.
A day in a private suite for an August 8th Cubs-Reds game. A one-day contract. Now, that would be neat. A chance to play in a game at Wrigley on 8-9, which, when the Cubs will be in San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
So you'll be playing on 8-9 in Wrigley, yep. But the Cubs won't be there.
Be at third base.
That'll be a couple of years from now when they're, like, selling chances to play an actual game.
Yeah, yeah, the way things are going. but here's what I'm thinking.
Pay a little premium.
Okay, here's what I'm thinking. It's $7,500 a guy, group of two, $12,000, group of three, three, Dave, Phil, Tom, $15,000, only $5,000 each. No, if it was White Sox, maybe. I just can't get a Cubs uniform, sorry.
No, I was surfing the web this morning before I left Portland. I know we're not going to go anywhere with this, but I did see, I think it was on the Tribune site and stuff, that for the first time the Cubs are going to have this is like good fodder for you White Sox fans. The Cubs are going to have a float in the Pride Parade, and the Hawks going to bring, one of the Hawks going to bring the Stanley Cup into the Pride Parade this weekend.
So I saw that.
Isn't that very interesting?
Yeah.
I just want to go on record saying that. We can move on.
Yeah. Hey, here, producer Dave is just putting up link from Jalen Rose's Twitter feed. Jalen Rose tweets today, my sources say that it is almost certain that LeBron James will not be returning to the Cavs. Bulls, Heat, Clips. As of today, the Bulls have the best chance of landing LBJ. Miami would need to make more roster moves. Clips have a puncher's chance. So there you go, Jalen Rose. It's starting to heat up. What is it? Let's see. July 1st is the first time anybody can actually sign. I don't know when they can announce them. But,
now, I mean, you see in the NFL free agency, you know, players sign at 12:01 a.m.
Yeah.
Somehow I don't think LeBron's going to quite do this. I see him just milking this thing and,
yep,
you know, going to each of the cities and letting everybody greet him like the Sultan. And I don't know. What would you put the over and under on when he makes his decision and it's formally announced? Can he do it in 2 weeks? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you would think if he really knows that the team's going to want him to hurry up, make the and announce it, because they're going to have to make their moves around it. But I agree with you. I think he would milk it as long as he could, if he can. But I think probably the idea that you're going to have to get this guy or that guy, if you get LeBron, that whoever does sign him, as soon as they can get it announced, they're going to. Either that, or maybe they delay it a little bit and they know they're getting them and they can still make their moves, I suppose. But I think they'd have to announce it as quickly as they can in order to. What's that, Phil?
Sometimes in baseball free agency, you see sometimes where the guys that are top tier guys, but not the number one guys, don't really want to sign until after the number one guy has signed, you know, both to set the ceiling for how, you know, hoping there'll be some Reagan trickle down economics and they'll get more following a huge signing. And also just kind of to let figuring that the teams that have gone after the big guy and didn't get him, now they're going to come get him. So I would think that dynamic would be in effect too, and that, you know, you won't see Wade and Bosch and those other guys sign until after LeBron signs.
You would think, yeah. I really, Wade seems the most likely just to stay in Miami. Doesn't he seem like he's set there? He's not going anywhere. I mean, you never know, but that sure seems that way to me. But I guess we're almost up time. We might as well take our second break. Hang in there. We've got the second break, and then after that, we've got Hoekstra's Chicago. So hang in there, folks.
The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played. They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787.
Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream is the place for great pizza and more. They use only the finest ingredients. That's why Rosati's mouthwatering menu can't be beat. Rosati's delivers for lunch daily. In Naperville, call 630-305-3500. In Carroll Stream, 630-653-9009. That's Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream.
Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois.
Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at SouthsideCards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at SouthsideCards.com.
Across the country and around the world, this is TalkZone.com, the best in Internet talk radio.
I don't know what the weather is like over out there in Chicago right now, but last Thursday night we were at the Matchbox, which is my favorite bar there in Chicago, 770 North Milwaukee Avenue at Ogden Avenue. We knocked back a few beers, and by Friday the storm had gone through and knocked out a few windows and stuff. Pretty intense damage there. But while taking the train today, about 8 or 9 years ago, they moved a regal, very regal, beautiful train car from the Atlantic Coast Line Railroad right next door to the Matchbox, and they put it was like a dining car, and they put a restaurant in it. They call it the Silver Palm. It's a 1947 car. It's got a great history. They've got pretty good food there. They've got like burgers and duck club sandwiches and really, really great fries. Anthony Bourdain went and visited it last year and got a lot of national press and stuff. But the history of the train car, and I've been thinking about it being on the train today, is just it's just very regal. It was it ran on a line, I think, that went from New York City to Miami, and back in the late 40s, it connected with a steamship service for overnight trips to Havana. And there's some speculation back in the mid-60s when Jackie Gleason, who didn't like to fly, was doing his shows in Miami Beach. He probably was taking this train back and forth between New York and Miami Beach. So it's really an interesting piece of railroad history, and it's really good food. And although I only drink beer and tequila, I know they're known for some of their top-shelf drinks and their martinis and stuff. So if you're ever on the near northwest side, it's a nice little twin spin of the Matchbox and the Silver Palm next door. So,
Dave, you did a really good baseball book review in last Sunday's Sun Times. And I know we were trying to work out a thing where we could get the author of Big Hair and Plastic Grass, A Funky Ride Through Baseball and America in the Swinging 70s, authored by Dan Epstein. We were going to get him on as a guest today. Couldn't make it, but now you know he's appearing somewhere this weekend, Dave?
I believe it's tomorrow at the Liars Club. And I don't know this Dan Epstein. I mean, I just know his bio from reading the book and stuff, but he's done, because I cover a lot of music for the Sun-Times, so I know he's done like liner notes for Rhino Records, and he comes at kind of baseball with a pop culture and musical, you know, angle on this book, which I think works really well in this book. And instead of doing, you know, bookstores and stuff, I know tomorrow night he's appearing and doing a signing at the Liars Club, which is a rock and roll, like, jukebox-type club on the near north side. I don't have the address in front of me, but it's an interesting way of marketing a book, of things like that.
It looks like it's 1665 West Fullerton, the Liars Club, 8:30 Thursday. We just got breaking news, though, that Dave Olson is – listen to this one. The Blackhawks have traded – Bufflin, Ben Eager, and Brent Sopel to Atlanta. Wow. It just came across the wire. They didn't say who they got yet. I know the only reason they're doing this is because they were really in trouble with the salary cap. But man, I thought they were going to try to hang on to Bufflin no matter what. That's really a surprise to me. Wow. Wonder
well,
if they
I,
got
you know,
it.
I think that's a hard salary cap in the NHL, and I think it really put them in a position to have to make really difficult decisions. And in a way, you know, you could argue maybe, you know, versus that salary cap, they're overloaded with star-type players. I mean, they have, you know, couple of big contracts in the back, and you know, three or four, you know, up front. And you know, one thing I saw that along those lines is that you can send a guy to the minors, and his salary won't count against you. So there's speculation that Christopher Huey could play all of next year for beautiful Rockford, and just be, you know, would only count against the Hawks' cap, you know, if they had an injury and had to bring him back up. But I mean, it's tough stuff. You know, if you look at what happened to Detroit after they won, and I guess Washington took a big hit on their cap, you know, from their cap a couple of years ago. It seems to be part of just the way the business works in the NHL right now. By the way, Tom, I heard they're getting like a number one draft pick from, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago, back from Atlanta, a name that meant nothing to me. I think Jeremy Morin, M-O-R-I-N, and maybe another player or two. But I think this young guy who's not yet making money, significant money, was the big you know, attraction, although the need was dumping contract.
Yeah.
I wonder if it will affect Sopel's appearance in the Pride Parade.
Oh, that's right. That's who was going to be in that, with the cup.
Gee, sorry I brought that up.
Yeah. Why? To me, they're really going to miss Bufflin with that physical presence, man.
Yeah, I don't know if they would have, you know, made it four rounds of the playoffs without what they got from him. I mean, you know, it wasn't like, you know, even though Taves was the MVP and Kane had the game-winning goal, you know, it was all their secondary scores that really seemed to, you know, allow them to score four or five a night like they did in all of their big wins. And you know, Bufflin being the guy right there in the middle, I know, certainly created a lot of that.
Yeah, wow. That makes what I was going to talk about next not seem all that big a deal. Here, well, there were two things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about a trade, but I'm thinking the White Sox are trying to trade for a lefty bat. So I'm thinking, first off, who would you guys rather – well, Dave probably doesn't care because he's a Cubs fan and doesn't care about the Sox. But to me, there's three potential power-hitting lefties, Fielder, Dunn, and Berkman, who has been powerful but isn't this year, and he's a switch hitter. But what do you think, Phil, out of those three guys, first off, who would you think they'd have the best chance of getting? And then second, who do you think – they really might get?
Well, I think of, you know, I think Dunn could be moved, and I think Berkman wants to be moved. He's had an off year. Of those guys, Dunn's the guy that I think most want, especially in the American League, you know, where you can play him every night at DH, maybe use him in the field a little bit. But, you know, Dunn's the guy out of that group that I would want. But there's another guy out there that I'm kind of intrigued by, for the White Sox, which is David DeJesus of the Royals. If the Royals could get over trading within their division, you know, I think you could, and of course, it all comes back to Juan Pierre, my guy, but you know, you could play DeJesus in left field.
I'm
going to let you still use Pierre as your primary DH and leadoff guy, but DeJesus is a really good outfielder. He's got a right fielder's arm. So I think with Rios in center, DeJesus next to him, you would really upgrade your outfield defensively. And, you know, he's also hitting .320 over the last three seasons. He's right about a .300 hitter, has a high on base percentage. And, you know, I think, you know, looking at the White Sox, you know, it's just creating scoring chances, I think, is their big problem. They're way down ranked in terms of number of at-bats with men in scoring position. And I think DeJesus could really, he'll drive in some runs, but, he's kind of a hybrid table setter kind of guy, hitting second maybe behind, although people are excited about Omar Vizquel now as the number two hitter. I don't know if that's going to last, but, I like DeJesus. Dunn would be, I've always wanted Dunn in Chicago on one side of town because he is a delightful guy, and the way he plays the game, all out, full swing, home run or bust. And, you know, it's a Sosa-esque, but I don't know that he's, he does it in a team concept without it necessarily always being about him. But his at-bats are, you know, to me are really fun to watch.
He's kind of this generation's Dave Kingman, you know. I've always thought that he's kind of, you know, he's not as surly, of course, as Kingman it was.
he should be a DH, though, that Adam Dunn, without a doubt. He really can't play a position.
He is Dave athletic, Kingman, though.
What, you know, Phil?
He's not a good fielder, but he is athletic. I mean, this was a guy that was, I think he spent 1 year at the University of Texas as a backup quarterback. So I don't know. I think he's a better athlete than Kingman. But, you know, he puts up those kind of numbers. That's a good analogy.
Who was the writer that Kingman supposedly, like, hung over the side of a boat? Either of you guys remember that one?
No, I don't know that one. He
was Jay Mariotti.
I think he would have let go. Yeah, I don't remember who that was. I guess obviously it wasn't either of you guys.
No.
We'll have to look that one up.
I might have that in my files at home, actually. Yeah.
Never go fishing with Dave Kingman if you're a writer.
He had an ice cream shop, you know, over it was Kingman's Corner or something. It was over by Lane Tech. He had a little ice cream shop there when he played for the Cubs. You know,
did he really? I didn't know that.
Instead of sports bars and restaurants, they were doing ice cream shops. The storefront is still there. It was really tiny, and he ran that for a couple years.
Well, here's something else I wanted to talk about. I don't know what got me started on this, but the quality start rule. Who came up with 6 innings pitched and 3 earned runs as a quality start? That's a 4.5 ERA, and the bullpen's got to pitch 3 innings. To me, if it does have to be 6 innings pitched, it should be no more than 2 earned runs, and really 7 inning pitched. 3 runs in 7 innings, I can kind of live with that. But 6 innings pitched, 3 runs, and they go, okay, that's a quality start for you. I'm sorry, I'm not in on that. What do you guys think about that?
I actually think the rule works pretty well. And, you know, that 4.5, I hear that all the time, but that's if a guy only hits the minimum standard every time out. You know, the guys who pile up the quality starts are also your top 10 ERA guys. And, you know, John Lowe from the Detroit Free Press is the guy who developed that, and, you know, he first started just tracking it himself, and it got popular and spread from there, and I think it's a pretty decent measurement of staffs. But, you know, look, your White Sox pitching staffs, Tom, always have been really high in quality starts, and you know, yet sometimes people are wanting them to get better starting pitching, but they have had guys that, you know, maybe it measures durability. If you can get them over, you know, if you can make your 30 starts a year, you can get 10 or 15 of them.
How did he devise those numbers? What makes 6 and 3 work as opposed to 7 and 2? Or, you know, why is it 6 innings and
well,
3 runs?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't have any problem with the quality start rule. Right. I have a problem when they say, And the studs that have a lot of quality starts, fine. They go 7, 8 innings. They give up 2 or 3 runs there. But guys who go 6 innings, 3 runs, and they're done, and that's a quality start, I don't buy that. I don't think that is. I think that shouldn't be the breakoff point. I think that's not good enough. That's my point.
Tom, it was developed during the offensive era. You know, it's from the late 80s, mid 90s, in that period was when John developed it. And also, you take into account it goes 1 inning past the standard of historical disdain, which is the starting pitcher who did the 5 and fly.
Yeah.
Innings, you know, qualify for the win and then go take a shower. That's really the standard of unacceptable. It's always been the 5 and fly. So this forces you, at least forces the guy to get another 3 outs.
And I'm okay even with that, but not at three runs in six innings. That's really what gets me. If it's only six innings, two runs. That's where I don't think anybody can give me an argument that's going to change my mind about that one. Yeah. Oh, wait, here's more details. Bufflin, Sopel, and Ben Eager to Atlanta for two picks and two players, Dave Olson, or just two picks? It looks like it's two players and two picks. Okay. So I guess we'll be learning more about who those players are. We don't have that info yet. But it looks like it's for sure Bufflin, Sopel, and Ben Eager were traded to Atlanta. And we're almost getting, we're right down to the end here. Either you guys have anything coming up that you want to tell our listeners? Any big stories coming or anything you're working on?
I got a story in today's paper, actually, on a woman who's got a great rock and roll record out, and she's touring, like, she's promoting the record by touring prisons and healthcare centers and Navajo Indian reservations, and she's going to be in Missicordia on the 28th. But it's a real good 60s American pop record. Her name's Mary McBride, so that's in today's paper.
Is that in the regular paper, Dave, or in a special section? Okay,
no, that's in the Arts.
Yeah. Sun-Times.
Yeah.
And Phil Rogers of the Tribune, and you're going to be on Chicago Tribune Live later tonight, right, Phil, at 5:30?
Yes, making an appearance there. I've also been doing a regular thing with on Sirius XM Radio, 2 o'clock Central on Tuesdays, Chris Russo's show, just talking about Major League Baseball. And, you know, I think everybody should pick up a newspaper on Saturday morning because we got Carlos Zambrano versus the White Sox at U.S. Cellular. The last time he pitched there was he got hit around and then just started firing the ball at White Sox hitters, if you guys will remember. And so I think this is going to be a very interesting weekend for Sox Cubs.
This will be. Okay, final details on the trade or more details, and then we'll have to let everybody go, but Bufflin, Sopel, Eager, and Aliu to Atlanta in exchange for the 24th overall pick in the 2010 draft, the 54th pick, and Marty Reasoner and Jeremy Morin. So that's the deal. I guess it's they had to clear some cap space, so you hate to see those Stanley Cup guys go, but you knew somebody had to go. So that's it for another week, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Fan Cave Radio Show. Dave Olson, another great job. Phil Rogers of the Tribune and Dave Hoekstra of the Sun-Times. Thanks for listening, everybody.